Number one, this is a podcast for small to medium businesses. We're going to talk marketing, hiring, leadership, human resources, taxes, operations, everything you need to run your business better. Number two, the experts you hear on this show are going to give you easy to understand tips that you can put in place quickly. Number three, every day you gotta laugh. Life is too short to take it seriously all the time. This is 3 for 3. Let's go. All right. Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining in for another episode of 3 for 3. Today, we have Joe Swiatkowski, who is the president of Hickory Harvest Foods and two subsidiary companies. The Swiatkowski family owns and operates food processing and manufacturing companies, and they're all here, one of my neighbors here in Akron, Ohio. Their production includes nuts, dried fruits, organics, chocolates, and yogurts. And Joe has been focused on running the day-to-day operations of the company, as well as the future planning. Hickory Harvest Foods was started by his father and grandfather in the early 1970s, and they produced smoked meats and cheeses. In the 1980s, the business morphed into roasting nuts and trail, which they produce today as well. The company continues to manufacture and process and distribute bulk and packaged goods throughout the United States. They do this under their own label, as well as many private brands for their customers. Joe continues to live in Akron, Ohio, and lives here with his wife and three expensive daughters. And why are they expensive, Joe? Are they any big hobbies?
They have a lot of hobbies and a lot of needs. So quite expensive is just a term. And, you know, you have four women in the house and you'd know what I mean.
I think kids of pretty much all nature are expensive any way you look at it. But anyway, welcome to the show, Joe. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So right now we are recording about mid-June 2020, and we are really right in the midst of dealing with the coronavirus and the pandemic that's hit the whole world. And all business leaders, I don't care who you are, have had to deal with this one way or the other. Some have been hit in a very hard way. Their business has been impacted quite a bit. Some have been impacted for the good. They've been very busy, but they've had to change how they operate and how they, whether it's how their operations go and how they deal with their staff or how they are outward facing and how their message gets to a larger public. Right now, the safety of people is the highest concern, I believe. Now, Joe, you're in the food industry, and this has had to have some sort of an impact on you. And what we're really looking forward to sharing with our audience today is who your audience is, how they've been impacted by it, how your company has been impacted by it, and really as a leader, what you've done, what measures you've put in place to make sure that your company is successful throughout this. So, Joe, I'll throw it over to you and give us maybe one of the top things that you did when this pandemic hit.
I would say from the beginning of the pandemic, even to now, what we've really learned to do is be very, very nimble. And, you know, what we decided 10 minutes ago may change in 10 minutes from now because of, especially immediately after, you know, the CDC reducing guidelines, us doing, you know, analysis on what we do internally. You know, we are part of the vital food chain in the United States, so we knew we were going to keep working. But what does that mean? What's the new normal? And what we found out from, you know, we've been doing this for what, 2.5 months now, is by being nimble, you know, we're making decisions based off of our best input, our best, you know, executive collaboration within our company. And not saying that those decisions are also going to be final because things change. You know, if you look at from what everything started and the many, many things we put in place from, you know, sanitizing every, you know, touch surface or making our people wear masks. Those things were extremely important at first. And now they're still important, but they're not as important except for the masks to us because the CDC came out and said, it's less likely that you're going to get this from touch. It's more going to be passed through airborne from everything that we've read and talked to. So it's not that we've stopped doing so many things, but we stopped being so stringent on call it wiping door handles and making sure that people are wearing their masks, that if somebody is sick at all, that we pay them to stay home. If somebody's sick and they can't afford it, we said, look, just go to the doctor. You get a release. We'll pay for the doctor visit. It's just, it's not a problem.
So I love this idea. And I think this impacts our businesses, any kind of small businesses in general. And that is that we can be nimble. You know, that's something, that quality of both our businesses share, that we are small enough that we can make decisions that impact us immediately. And that is so important to be able to, when you've got a crisis like this, and it doesn't matter if it's a health crisis or it's an economic crisis or whatever it may be, we can make those decisions so that it's a quick decision that can come about. It's something that I think the big corporations can struggle with. Some of the great ones out there that have good leaders have a good management that they can make quick decisions and have that same characteristic. Fortunately, I think we come about it fairly naturally. Joe, have you had any mentors that have helped guide you in that process?
Over the period of the last 15 years, many, honestly. Some were my dad's friends. After my dad passed away 15 years ago, he had a couple of close friends that have given me very good advice. A couple of them to this day, I still talk to them here and there, just more to say hi now. And you know, they want an update on how things are going or whatever. But yeah, I couldn't be where I am without, you know, taking advice from people, mentors, extra schooling, you know, whatever it may be. It's vitally important. The one thing I learned probably, it's probably been 8 years ago now, is when I really decided to start listening instead of talking. I always thought I knew everything. And you learn over time that, you know, there's probably a better way. Just because we do something back there in the manufacturing aspect a certain way, it's because somebody came up with that idea. Whether it was me or somebody else doesn't matter, but there's probably a better way. And we need to keep our eyes and ears open to that advice that comes in so that we can execute in a better way. And those are always the things that really, you know, keep us going, which is new ideas and new inspiration to run our businesses, because we can't, you know, if you're not growing, you're dying. And we've got to do that in not just revenue, but in the way we manufacture product, the way we process product, the safety behind our product, and so on.
And so how do you set up your management team there so that you have the opportunity to make sure that you are listening? Would you mind sharing how many employees you have at the company there?
We have about 80 employees. During certain times of the year, we have a lot of temporaries in here when it's, call it busy season, to pack holiday trays and things like that. Our management staff, we have an executive team of 9 total. Five of them report directly to me. Those are all functions of people that report to me, which would be HR, operations, finance, and sales. Mm-hmm. So those all report to me directly, and the other people funnel down through them that are people on our executive team. Our executive team has quality under it, as well as maintenance, and those all fall under operations. Okay. So those are all of our key personnel, and then customer service falls under sales as well.
Mm-hmm. And so do you have a process in place that you, as the leader of the company, that you ensure that you are listening to your leadership team or the folks on the floor, or anyone that might come up with that idea, so that you're getting that feedback? How do you go about that?
Asking open-ended questions is the easiest way. We just had an idea making session last Wednesday where I put out a statement that I had said that this is what I'm trying to do during COVID right now. What can we do as a group and as a company to expand upon? What things can we do better right now so that when things change, or things that we can do right now, that we can be better? And everybody had to come up with 3 or 4 ideas. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about those ideas during a session. Then everybody gets to vote on them, and we're picking the top 4 ideas to say, these are, we're going to execute them. We don't care what they are. It doesn't matter. We're going to brainstorm them once everybody picks them and their level of importance. And so that way, everybody has direct input on how we change, how we get better. And that's just the way we do it. We don't do, one-to-one so much, you know, that's kind of a thing in the past, in my opinion. People do one-on-one meetings. People do one-on-one, you know, job performance descriptions. I really don't agree with much of that. To talk one-on-one, that makes a lot of sense. But management by executive group is a lot better than somebody saying, well, why haven't you been performing? Because I could tell one of my executives, I said, well, here's the standards that we've put out. Here's the standards that you said you're going to hit and you're not hitting them. Why? I don't want to have to do that, but they have to do that in front of the group. And who wants to not perform in front of the group? And so we basically do management by executive team, and we all hold each other accountable. And I tell them all the time, I said, and given I know they have a hard time doing it, but I tell them, if you see me not doing something, I want to know about it. Mm-hmm. Because I'm as acceptable to the group as you are. And everybody's equal here. So I would say that's the kind of the transformation over the last couple of years that I've really tried to make after we, I would say, struggled with a lot of the one-on-one type things.
Which I can see that being a difficult thing to get started, because no one wants to hurt other people's feelings, right? They want to be kind. So would you say it took a couple of years for people to get over that, okay, we know that this feedback is important for the company, which is important for our future, as opposed to, I want to make sure people like me?
Yep. Definitely not the the easiest thing to go to. I would say the best decision that I did was, I've been fortunate to go to many different types of schooling. I actually belong to Vistage, which I've learned a ton through there. I've probably taken 4 or 5, maybe even 6 now, personality tests, right? And they tell you a lot of different things, whether it's Myers-Briggs or there's just so many of them, and they're all very good tools. So I took one of the ones, and we did our executive meetings last year up in Cleveland, and I took it off of a guy that did it with us, and I had about a 3-hour session that I kind of, it was Q&A, but they all took this approach ahead of time, so I knew where they fell, and it was all graphed, and it basically shows people as, you know, A, B, C, D, but this one was a different, a little bit different, but it puts people in categories, and each category describes those people. And after they learned the way that those people like to communicate, everything changed. Because some people like to communicate with the facts, as short sentences as possible, and that's it. They don't want to hear anything else. Some people only want to talk one-to-one. Some people want to make sure everybody's feelings have been heard before they make a decision. So that has really helped the executive team, because we literally had, out of the 4 groups, there was 2, 1, 3, and 3 in the different categories that were mapped out. And everybody was quite different. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do another one of those again. I actually work with an outside consultant who does leadership consulting for us. And she's going to run a second one that is, call it more complicated, one that I don't feel comfortable running, something that she does. And it's better when somebody else runs it anyways. I run enough stuff every day. They don't need to hear from me all the time. So bringing in people like that has been very beneficial. And I think as people, especially our executive group, learns to communicate with each other better, we become nimble. We execute better, all those kind of things.
It isn't interesting when you have one of those studies and you find out from your leadership that, as you said, you've got people that fall in multiple categories. And when you don't manage that right, you have got people butting heads. When you do, you're maximizing what they do best, and everyone works better. And it's almost like you can either go one way or the other with this. And with that knowledge, you can find out how you can go the right direction.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm gonna kind of wrap that up and say that's kind of like our second tip here, that the listening and stopping, and don't talk so much, listen to your team, make sure you're asking those open-ended questions, and that management by executive group, something I made note of as well, and I think that's something that some of our listeners, if you don't have that in place, something you might want to consider. I want to, so for our third tip here, I want to turn over to maybe what your company did from an outward-facing perspective. What did you have to do to your clients, your customers, to make them feel comfortable with what you were doing as a company?
From an outside end, I would say there actually wasn't much in our particular business. Some people, supermarkets were thriving. Many other parts of our business were, call it, holding on. And some of them weren't doing anything while everything was shut down. Mm-hmm. So we hit a few different segments. We hit supermarkets, which were busy. We hit convenience stores and truck and travel plazas, which if people are traveling and getting gas, they're great. But when people during COVID, they were not. So that business was probably 25% of what it normally is. And then when you have the food service industry, which we also hit, which is bars and restaurants, they were literally completely shut down. So we had different segments of our business that were very different, but we didn't really have to do much because all those people are working at home. Nothing's changing from an outside perspective. They just want us to fill orders right now. There's no, they pretty much put all projects on hold to where now just some of those are starting to open up. So from the outside end, it's just become harder to sell because there's not new things going on right now. That'll change as people get back in the office. But we didn't have to do much there. I would say what we had to do a lot of was the inside changes. You know, we had to go back to our emotional intelligent days of being very empathetic because I would say non-COVID times, we make decisions for the best interests of our employees or we think they're the best interests of the employees. And 80% of them are going to say, yeah, we like that idea. Mm-hmm. During COVID, that completely changed. Everybody has a different functionality of what they believe in this virus, and that complicates things. It creates a high level of unsurety. And I would say, so we have to be very empathetic to people that say, this thing's all BS, we don't believe in this, this isn't happening, this is just another virus, all the way to the person that says, I have a pre-existing condition, I don't feel like coming into work is a good thing for me, what can I do? Those are two completely separate realms, but there's 15 things in between there that we couldn't dream of before non-COVID days before. So we've really had to put different kind of hats on from an empathetic type, being very good listeners again, and we always come back to the listening topic. But at the same point, we have to soothe and calm and say, look, just because one person says this and you say this doesn't mean we're different people. We just have different beliefs. We are doing everything that we can, and we're focusing on the changes that we've made to make them safe, no matter who they are. And I've even had a couple people that are on the one end and say, this is nothing. I said, stop talking about that, please. Okay, talk about it with your family. Just don't bring it to work because all they're doing is really riling other troops up, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And you put that on top of everything that's going on top of the, you know, the other crises that happen in Minnesota, that all affects everything right now because everybody's on a high sense of alert and it breeds conflict right now, if you will, and just trying to keep everybody calm, loose, and in a good frame of mind is just very, very important.
You know, so one of the things that you did was you took action by maybe not switching your messaging. So I'm gonna put on my marketing hat for a moment here. It's what we do here when we talk about brand and messaging. And as we talk to some of our clients through this process, there were certainly a lot of people out there that had the gut reaction, and we have to change things up here. And in some cases, I think that's appropriate. In your case, you were already putting out a good product. You already had to go through certain health standards because of the industry that you're in. So you kept consistent with your brand messaging. And I would venture to believe that for your customers and your clients, that that's something that they didn't need to know, or that putting a messaging out there that was different than what you were doing for the last 10, 15 years, however long, might make them worry about it more. The fact that you've been consistent and you stay with that, just from a brand position, probably a smart decision at this time.
Yeah, we believe it was. And you know, I would say we're talking to our customers more now than we ever have because they actually have time to talk. They're at home, most of them, and most of them are picking up their phones. So the conversations have turned more towards non-business activities and just being comfortable with the situation because they need somebody to talk to because they're home and they're not used to it. You know, there's one lady from a big company that we deal with, and she's at home while her husband had to go to work, and she's able to work at home. She's got a three-year-old daughter, and her three-year-old daughter is always pulling her camera down and stuff, and she's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, I got kids at home. It doesn't bother me a bit. It's an all new normal for us, and that's okay.
Yeah.
We just got to be accepting of that, and that we're all in the same boat in the end.
So I've just, this is a, I guess I'm looking for an insider tip on the snack industry. In a time like this, do you release a new product? Or, I mean, there's plenty of trends out there in the snack industry. Do you follow that now, or do you stay consistent?
I would say we offer new packaging ways, but not necessarily, this is not a time to offer a new product launch, because they're not going to be susceptible to new products right now. They can't execute it, because everybody isn't in the office collaborating to understand and make a decision, first of all, to bring a new product in, and second of all, how it's going to execute by the time it gets to retail.
Right.
But what we are able to do is what they call promotional vehicles, in and outs. So right now we've got a thing called dollar bags. So they cost a dollar in the supermarket. So you pick one up, you pick 10 up. It's simple, it's easy, it's a buck, right? And it's easy revenue for them. Supermarkets are already doing well. They need other things to sell. That's an easy one. We're also doing a cashew promotion, okay? Pricing of cashews has eased because demand has went down. So we're talking to our customers and saying, hey, promotional vehicle. You want to sell cashews? It's one of the better selling snack items you have in the store. We can offer, you know, you guys a really good price on this. And, you know, what can we do there? Those are simple things that we can do to an outside perspective, just trying to gain some business that we normally wouldn't on an everyday basis right now. And those things are more apt to be being chosen right now than a new product launch.
Yeah. Reposition what you're currently doing and make it comfortable for the folks out there that are selling it.
For sure.
That's good stuff. All right, Joe, I've got three questions for you. Are you ready? These are industry, snack industry related questions. And there's no prizes for this. And I'm just kind of curious to see what you're seeing on here. So, are you ready for some good questions?
Let's go for it.
All right. So millennials and snacking, marketing business people talk about millennials often and where they fit within it. So when it comes to snack foods and millennials in the past few years, is that generation, is it trending up? A, is it trending up with them consuming more snacks? Is it trending down? B, or C, is it staying about the same?
Well, it's naturally trending up because the millennials have more buying power than any other age group now. So that being said, what they say matters. The differences that we've chosen are a lot of smaller packaging. It's not a pound bag. It's a 1 or 2 ounce snack. And that snack is not a one item snack. It's a robust trail mix with, you know, heavy flavor profiles, because that's what they demand. And so that's a lot of what we came out with, doing that with more of the lower ounces in a bag to conform to their 7 snacks a day versus traditionally 3 meals.
Yeah. Well, and that co-aligns with what at least the NOSH reported as since 2015, saying millennials were consuming 3 or more snacks a day, then that's increased over that period by 13%. So next question here, this is a global question. In 2019, which country showed the biggest percentage growth in snacking? Here are your options, Joe. A, India, B, Australia, or C, Argentina?
Well, just because of buying power, it's India. Some of the other countries have more of a percentage up, but when it comes to dollars, it's the countries with the most people. It's China, it's India. So for that one, I would say India.
Well, I will make sure I clarify this. Percentage growth.
Percentage growth?
Yeah.
So you said Argentina and what was the other one?
Australia.
I would go with Australia.
I tell you what, it was Argentina last year.
Really?
They were up by 25, almost 26%.
That's interesting. I honestly say I don't know a lot about the Argentine population and what they demand. We don't export to them.
Yeah, right.
We know they grow a lot of peanuts there. But other than that, don't know much about them, unfortunately.
No problem. Just for comparison, for you and for our audience, America's growth last year was just short of 5%. All right, last question here. So in America, what do you think the percentage of adults who eat at least one snack a day is? A, 75%, B, 85%, or C, 95%?
I would have to go with C.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it. 95%.
I'm surprised it's not close to 100%. I guess there are a few people out there that can deal without a snack, but not normally.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. 95% of adults eat at least one snack a day. They said, this comes from the Mental Health Snacking Motivations and Attitudes Report. And then 70% will eat at least two or more snacks per day. So, little insight about our snacking trends in America and across the world. But Joe, let me leave it at this. For folks that want to learn more about your company or more about you, how would you recommend them reaching out?
You'd be happy to get onto our website. Just updated about a year and a half ago. It's www.hickoryharvest.com. It shows our background of history, some old pictures, some new things that we have, some of our new packaging that we've came out with in the last couple of years, as well as some other updates on there. So that's the best way. If there's any personal questions or anything like that, feel free to reach out to me. My email is joe@hickoryharvest.com. And, we're happy to discuss things with people and help them improve.
Well, whether you are a snack enthusiast and you're part of that 95% that enjoys snacks every day, or you're someone that's a business leader in the local area or across the world, I hope that everyone listening out there got some good information from Joe and his tips from Hickory Harvest Foods today. Thanks for listening in. Joe, thanks for being a guest.
Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it.